Okay.
Pimp My Scream app.
They say that pimping ain't easy. Well, now it is. That might be my motto.
I think you need
that. Hello and welcome to the Cultcast, the best 30-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. My name is Arifun Elijah. I'm here with my friends and Apple experts, if you will. Alex E. Heath is here with us. Hey, Alex. Alex. Alex, can you hear me?
Ah, senor.
Jeez, a little bit of a delay going there. Can you hear me all right?
I can hear in Mexico.
And Buster's here with us too. Buster Hine. Hey, Buster, welcome back.
I don't have a clever intro.
Oh, I thought that was pretty clever, actually.
You got to change it every week, Buster. You got to come up with one.
You should have waited 20 seconds before you answered, like Alex.
Yeah, so you can think of one.
I thought, yeah, Alex was there thinking of his intro for 20 seconds.
Well, I was thinking of different nationalities, though. I was like Russian, German.
We're going to do Jamaican.
You know what I was thinking? Yeah. Do we need to restart the call? Because Alex is gone. Because it took him 20 seconds to answer.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we have a freaking great show planned. You know, normally I'm pretty apathetic about the show. You know, every episode, kind of boring. But this one, I've got a great feeling about. We have loads of stuff to talk about. And, you know, I asked all of our Facebook fans, our Cultcast Facebook page, by the way, is facebook.com/TheCultcast. And I asked you guys what you wanted us to talk about, and you guys gave us a ton of great suggestions. So we are going to be sprinkling those topics throughout the show, that the things that you wanted us to talk about. Before we start, I want to thank our sponsors. We actually have two sponsors this episode. We're getting pro. We're getting all sorts of pro. Chris Walk is back on the call, apparently interjecting whenever he feels like it. I want to thank DigiDNA for sponsoring the show. They've been sponsored for a little while now. We definitely appreciate that. They make Disk Aid 5, the iPod, iPad, and iPhone transfer tool for PC and Mac. And also, we have a new sponsor, Pimp My Scream, the easy way to totally customize your iPhone or iOS device. You can create all sorts of cool lock screens and home screens and all this other stuff. And we'll tell you more about both of them later in the show. Let's start with a topic suggested by, and I'm sorry if I'm butchering your name, but Tesserake Philmonson. That's awesome. A hard one to pronounce, but I did my best there. On our Facebook page, he asked us to talk about the Mars Curiosity rover. And I wanted to talk about this anyway because I just think it's such a fascinating discussion, because we have a freaking rover driving around Mars. Have you guys been looking at any of the pictures?
Yeah, I saw some.
Are you one of those guys, Buster, who's just not very excited about this?
Well, I mean, I think it's cool, but at the same time, I was like, wait, haven't we already been to Mars with a little rover thing? And I thought Michael Bay wrote a movie about it and stuff.
That's funny. I have a friend who said the exact same thing. He's like, we've already been to Mars. And I'm like, dude, but there is a machine that landed on Mars.
But we already did that.
That's true, but this is the biggest rover that they've ever landed.
Like, I mean, that's cool. I mean, it's still awesome. I'm, you know, go America. I just, you know, I'm not as enthusiastic about it as everybody else, I guess. I still think it's cool.
Alex, what do you think?
Well, you know, I follow the rover on Instagram.
It has an Instagram account?
No, I just actually just saw a bunch of, I think they just ran photos through filters to make it look like it had an Instagram. But no, I think it's awesome. I mean, I'm kind of like agree with Buster, like, why aren't we in like another galaxy yet? But no, it's cool. It's really neat. I didn't get to watch the feed of it landing, unfortunately, but I heard that was pretty cool.
Oh man, it was awesome. I mean, I watched the whole thing on my Xbox. They had this special event app that you could watch the entire thing on. And when I say watch it, like, you couldn't watch the Curiosity land. It was just, you got to watch the NASA, you know, like, mission room as they went through all the procedures of getting ready for this thing to land and stuff. And it was just amazing. I'm such a huge space nerd. That this kind of stuff just fascinates me. I know we've had another thing land on Mars before, but the idea to me that we have a machine that landed on another freaking planet and is driving around this planet by itself, taking photos of mountain ranges and analyzing rocks and stuff is just out of this world. It's, to quote Steve Jobs, Alex Heath, insanely great.
So the rover, it just like roves around, like drives around, and it picks up rocks and it like kind of taps them and just like, yep, it's a rock.
This is a rock, moving on. And it shoots the rocks with lasers.
How long is it going to be there?
Well, its mission is for 2 years, so hopefully it lasts longer than that. So it's supposed to drive around for 2 years. It's looking for minerals that will show that water either exists or has existed on Mars in the past.
And it's nuclear, though, right? So they're going to be killing any type of like life forms that they come into contact
with. Any life forms that they come into contact with gets vaporized immediately.
Messed up, man.
That's priority number one. It has one of those lasers on its shoulder, like Johnny Five in Short Circuit.
Love that.
And so if you're an alien and you see the Mars rover, use whatever appendages you have to escape as fast as possible. And did you guys notice that the entire mission room was using Max?
Yeah.
That part you guys thought was pretty cool.
Of course. And when it landed and they all stood up and started screaming, it was just like, it looked like just a really happy Best Buy genius squad with a bunch of Max.
Well, let's move on. This is a Max show after all. I want to talk about some new discoveries. iOS 6 beta just got updated, correct? And some news items revolving around that is, first off, we're going to say goodbye to the YouTube app.
Boom, boom.
Bye, bye, bye.
Brass bears.
That was in sync. Oh, get it right.
Oh, damn.
At least know your boy bands,
Airfun. That's embarrassing. That's embarrassing. Golly, yeah, I'm such an NSYNC fan. I should have known that. Well, let me ask you guys this. Do you guys actually ever even use the YouTube app?
No, it's a piece of crap.
It is a piece of crap. Like, I don't know anyone that uses it. Actually, my mom uses it.
The only way I use it is when an app will route me to it automatically, and then I go out and go to the mobile website.
Don't you hate it when that happens? Like,
yeah, and I'm so glad it's not going to happen anymore in iOS 6 because it's really frustrating. I mean, if YouTube would have just worked with Apple to update it and keep it, you know, operational, and you know, it's missing so much basic stuff, and it's just terrible.
Yeah, well, I was never a really big fan of it either. What were you going to say, Buster?
Well, the YouTube app is maintained by Apple, not Google.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why do you guys think that they're getting rid of it?
Because, well,
they hate Google.
Well, A, they said the license, you know, was up. So
yeah, and that's called hating Google.
Well, you know, Apple wasn't forced to keep it on there anymore. And I mean, like you said, it was kind of a sucky app. Why waste resources on that app when you could have your developers making better apps? Yeah. And, you know, let Google do their own thing. You know, I mean, I feel like YouTube's just kind of become like nobody surfs YouTube anymore. You upload your video and then you share it at other places, you know. So it was like 5 years ago, you used to go to YouTube for fun.
People
like us probably don't surf YouTube anymore, but there's the vast majority.
Still surf it?
For sure. Like, young kids, especially.
My 13-year-old sister will stay on YouTube all day.
Tell her to grow up.
Well, she's trying, but it takes time.
I agree with Buster. You know, it was an outdated app, and Apple obviously hadn't paid attention to it. And also, Apple and Google just are trying. I mean, Apple's trying to get as far away as it can from Google. So, you know, the Maps app and this, and you know, Google YouTube integration isn't even in Mountain Lion. They did Vimeo instead. So
that's a great point. Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, they're obvious.
Vimeo's way better.
Vimeo is better, but it doesn't have...
Just the quality is better.
Oh, it's way better. Everything about it is better, but it doesn't have the, you know, the market share.
Yeah.
You know, YouTube
but that's
is like
a good thing. That's why the quality is so good on Vimeo.
Right, but you're not going to get the same amount of, you know, the same discovery. It's kind of like
You're not going to get like 50,000 cat videos or, you know, little teenagers crying on it. So
I think
that's a good thing. Yeah.
If there's one thing I like, it's teenagers crying while holding a cat. Those are primarily the videos that I watch on YouTube.
Those are the best ones.
Those are the best ones. Well, the other feature that I saw that I thought was really interesting is iOS 6 is going to allow apps to use Wi-Fi plus cellular for their connections, which means, tell me if you've ever been in this scenario. You're leaving your house, you're downloading something, and you're in your driveway, and your Wi-Fi signal goes to nothing, right? And your phone won't switch over to 3G. And now the apps will be able to use Wi-Fi plus cellular to download stuff. So the iPhone will be able to switch instantaneously to use whichever signal is strongest. Right, Alex?
Right.
Which is great because...
Yeah, it's great.
That's a feature I never even thought I would want to use. But it's a problem that I have all the time.
Yeah, it's a cool little minor thing. You know, it's just another example of Apple's attention to detail. I mean, it's not massive, but it's going to... It's nice.
It is nice, especially when you're downloading podcasts a lot like I am. I mean, I feel like I'm always downloading something right before I leave, right? So, because I'm going to listen to it while I'm gone. So I'm always ending up I have to get out of my car and go near my door to let the download finish. And now I can just continue on. It seems like a basic thing, but another cool feature. Well, for a majority of this episode, we want to talk about something that happened to a technology writer named Matt Honan. He used to be a writer for Gizmodo, and now he's a writer for Wired. And he got himself hacked recently, and it's been this big story all over the internet because basically his Apple ID was hacked, his Amazon account was hacked, his Gmail was hacked. So we want to tell you what happened to him. And then I want to talk a little bit about how you could prevent these same things from happening to you. And some of the people on our Facebook page have asked us how to use the web more securely, how to back up, what our backup strategies are. So we want to talk a little bit about that. But Alex, I think you're probably the most versed on the Matt Honan story. Is that right?
I mean, I don't know how long Buster sat and stared at the article, but...
Well, Buster, you're a pretty big Matt Honan fan, right?
Yeah, I enjoy Matt's writing.
You're a fanboy of Matt Honan.
Yeah.
So let me try to shorten the story and summarize it, if you will, and you guys tell me, you guys interject whenever you feel like you should. So Matt Honan recently was at home, and starting from the very beginning, and he's like, what happened to my computer? What were you laughing at, Alex?
No, it's Honan and home.
He was at Honan. Actually, never mind. That's a bad joke. I'm not even going to continue with that one. So... he's using his iPhone when all of a sudden it resets itself. And he's like, what the heck's going on here, right? Didn't really think anything of it. And then his Mac starts to reset itself. And in this process, he realizes that his Gmail account's been hacked and all of his email from the last 8 years has been deleted.
That a-hole.
His Amazon account has been hacked. Oh. And his Apple ID, worst of all, was hacked, which allowed the hackers to get into his iCloud account and remotely wipe his iPhone. They remotely wiped his iPad, and they remotely wiped his MacBook. And he probably had a MacBook Air or something, which is crazy, right? Because this type of thing had never been possible before. But now that everything's interconnected, it's amazing that with one password, you know, a hacker can gain access to all this different stuff and essentially ruin your digital life. I mean, he wasn't admittedly backing up very often. So he lost a ton of stuff that unless he can get, you know, a data recovery place to find again, it's lost forever. Like, his daughter is like 1 year old and he had all these pictures of her on his MacBook that are now gone forever. He had pictures of relatives that are now deceased, that those pictures are now gone forever. And I guess what had happened is the hackers had somehow gained access to his Amazon account first. And they were able to get the last four digits of his credit card number. And then they used the internet to figure out what his home address was. And with that information, which, you know, Amazon somewhat securely protects, but not really.
I don't know if that's exactly the order. You're correct that they got into Amazon first, but they did that through some social engineering tactics, and then I believe they just used like Whois to find his address from his personal domain.
Right, exactly.
And so when you call Amazon, all you need is that information in the last four digits, and so they got that, and then Coincidentally, those last four digits are also the exact same digits Apple needs to authorize a password reset.
Exactly, which highlights the big problem here is that with all these companies requiring, or I should say with all these companies using different bits of information as the parts that they consider to be important, it was easy for these hackers to grab the information that they needed from Amazon to access all of his information at Apple, which allowed them to then go in and remotely wipe everything.
Yeah.
So I think the big question here is how do you prevent this from happening to you? And I just like, we'd like to talk about some strategies that you guys use to kind of keep yourself safe on the internet. I mean, besides the obvious, you don't click on strange links and enter your password. Number one, right? Never do that kind of thing.
Right.
But I think that if Matt had kept separate passwords for all his important accounts, that probably would have squashed the problem right there. Wouldn't you guys agree?
Or if he would have just turned two-factor authentication on in Gmail, which is when somebody tries to gain a password reset, a text is sent to your phone that is a one-time code that you enter to reset your password. So that makes it more physically secure because they would have to have access to your phone as well as this information physically. So there's a lot of ways he could have saved himself from this, and he talks about it in his article, so I don't want to get into it. But you're right. It's mainly just not linking everything together,
which is something that's so easy to do, right? Because you have all these different websites that you use, and do you really want to remember a different password for every site that you go to? I mean, who actually does that?
And I think it's important to note that the reason the hackers were getting into his account in the first place, all of this was just like on the side. They were just trying to get to his Twitter account. That's all they wanted. He has a three-letter Twitter account, M-A-T, because he signed up really early, and those things are valuable. And all these hackers wanted was to gain access to that Twitter. And so what they did is they daisy-chained and went through Amazon to Apple and then to Gmail and then to Twitter and were able to get into his Twitter. And in the process, they demolished his digital life. It's just interesting to me that this wasn't even this wasn't an attack on him personally, as in it wasn't an attack on his – they could have gone after his bank. They could have gone after all this stuff. They just wanted the Twitter.
Which is fascinating, right? Because it's the same as I had my car stolen like 2 years ago, and all they did was take it on a joyride and leave it somewhere, and that's basically what happened to him. I mean, they trashed it, obviously, right? I mean, they left it running with the windows down and the car running, and my battery was dead. I was out of gas, and some bum I think had smoked about two packs of cigarettes in my car and probably pooped in it. But that's pretty much what happened to his Twitter account, and all this devastation for nothing, and. It would have been so easy if he would have just kept, you know, different passwords for different sites. I mean, they would have gained access to maybe one thing but not the other. And I have to admit, I keep several sets of passwords. I mean, my banking passwords are mixed because I'm like, if someone gains access to my Amazon account, at least they can't get into my bank account.
Well, right? I don't know about your password. I don't think just having a bunch of different passwords is enough. I think The main problem with this hack was that he used, like, his email address across the board was the same. So his Apple ID was his Gmail, which was his Amazon, which was his Twitter. So, and because, you know, a lot of us, we try to get the same username across things. So his thing was, you know, like, whatever, matthonan@mac.com and then matthonan@gmail.com. And so, the hacker was able to see with, even though part of the email was, I think, asterisked out on Amazon, he was able to guess, okay, this guy's using his exact same naming.
Right. It started with an M and there were some asterisks, so it ended with an N.
So the problem was he was using a dummy account that he never checked. If he would have actually been using his Mac account, he would have seen that password reset come into his inbox, probably, maybe, I don't know, there was a chance, and he would have been able to stop it. But that was the spam, you know, dummy account that he never really used. And I have accounts like that. I have Hotmail and stuff I use for spam, and it was all linked together, and because his naming scheme was the same, the hacker could just guess his way into what he needed.
So Alex, do you think the key then Or I should say, one of the things that you could do to kind of prevent this from happening to you is to use different usernames at these different websites.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I also think it's important to realize that if someone is coming after you, there's a difference between like a random brute force hack or, you know, a spam thing trying to get a hold of you that has no, you know, actual association with needing anything from you, but you're just one of the millions out there. And that there's a totally different, it's a total difference between that and a personal attack, which was what this was. And if somebody's resilient and skilled and driven enough to personally attack you in the way that Matt was attacked, and if they're actually more malicious even than this guy was who just wanted his Twitter, but if somebody's really trying to go after you, it's going to be hard to keep them at bay. It's possible, but you really have to step up your game to do that. And so you've got things like, yes, multiple email addresses, multiple passwords, not easy passwords. You know, don't have your your birth date as your PIN.
Wait, what? Hold on. Be right back. And don't use 1234 for God's sakes. Spaceballs.
yeah. And things like Gmail's two-factor authentication is awesome. And if Gmail's like the hub of your online account life, which it is for me, having that Gmail locked down as best you can is the best thing to do. You know, have a really solid password, if it's your Apple ID especially, and then turn on that two-factor. Hey, what's up?
Good tunes.
And then turn on that two-factor authentication so that if someone tries to get in, they're going to have physical access to your devices to be able to do that.
Yeah, which most of the time they obviously won't because they're not going to have access to any of your physical items. Well, it's a scary story. I mean, I encourage you guys to read the whole Wired article. It's really well written, and it highlights a much bigger point, and that is as all our devices become interconnected in the cloud, which is where everyone's moving, I mean, the idea that someone can get a password and then remotely wipe all of your devices is insane to me. I mean, you're using your phone, and all of a sudden, it starts deleting itself. You know, hackers could use this to blackmail people. They could use this for all sorts of nefarious purposes.
And you know what? Really, this highlights Apple's lack of attention to detail with security, because what if there would have been a manual password reset that would have lasted? Like, say, if somebody tries to remote wipe your Mac, for instance. Mm-hmm. So what happens is when they remote wipe it with iCloud is a four-digit PIN thing comes up where you get this four-digit PIN on the other side of where the hacker was, and that's how you save your Mac from getting wiped, or that's how you get back into your Mac before it gets wiped. What if Apple had let you set some master password that, say, if somebody tried to remote wipe your iPhone, you had 10 or 15 seconds to enter this password in and cancel it?
Yes, or they would have had to enter this PIN number before even remote wiping. I mean,
right.
And I think what's really been highlighted here is Apple and Amazon need to revisit their security measures for this type of stuff.
And it's not just that, but the main crux of the problem in this case was Apple's over-the-phone support. Like, their online stuff was the way the hacker got into Matt Honan's stuff was over the phone. He called and impersonated Matt, which, again, if somebody's trying to target you, they'll go to links even as far as impersonating you. And so Apple's over the phone security was so laxed that all you needed to do was give that last four digits of the credit card, and he didn't have to answer the security questions that Matt had set up, you know, the personal questions that, like, your bank makes you, you know, have and stuff like that. And so Apple just waived that because he had this other information that you can get on the internet rather easily if you know how to use the internet. So that's, and Apple, for what it's worth, has said that it is working to make its over-the-phone support more beefed up, and until then, you can't actually reset passwords over the phone.
Yeah, they took swift action for sure, and so did Amazon. So now there's no more calling in to reset your passwords and that kind of thing until they revisit their, you know, their security policies and figure out what they need to do next, which is great, right? Because, I mean, Matt Honan basically described what you would need to do if you wanted to hack somebody.
Yeah,
and I'm like, oh, geez. As I was reading this, I was like, you basically told everyone how to do this.
Yeah, I turned on two-factor authentication the moment I read that, because it is scary. They were able to replicate it multiple times.
Yeah, I mean, I use Gmail, but not very much. So I wasn't as worried about it.
You don't use it as your main. Do you use iCloud as your main?
No, I don't use iCloud. I use my own server. So, I mean, I have my own domain, and I have it hosted with a company. And so I don't really need to worry about that stuff as much because I'm not like everybody else, which kind of helps me be more secure just in that measure. But yeah. I still use Gmail.
The safer you will be.
Yeah, for sure. Well, one of the things that Matt did not do is back up his stuff. And that's something I'm always surprised when I talk to people who don't back up, because it's so easy to do, especially with Time Machine. So I want to talk a little bit about our backup strategies and what we're doing to keep our data safe. But before I do that, I do want to talk about our sponsors. I always appreciate our sponsors because they allow us to keep making this show. And, you know, this show takes a lot of work. So it's great when a company signs on. They're like, you know, we like what you're doing and we want to throw gobs of money your way for doing it. And I'm like, thanks. Excellent. So let me tell you guys about DigiDNA. DigiDNA has been a sponsor for a little while, and they make a great app that I use fairly regularly called Diskade 5. And what Diskade 5 allows you to do is access your iOS device's file system. So if you want to pull something off your iPhone really fast, let's say a song, let's say you want to pull down your pictures from your camera roll, let's say you have a voicemail that someone left you that you want to put somewhere on your computer, you can plug in your iPhone and very easily and quickly pull any of that information right back down to your Mac. Super simple. And it allows you to access stuff that you honestly really wouldn't have another way of accessing, like your voicemails, like your call logs. There's just no other way to get access to that stuff. And also, it makes it super, super easy to put stuff onto your iPhone, which I think a lot of people don't really realize how tough it is to put certain things onto their iDevice until they try. And to take stuff off easily. A lot of times Apple makes you go through iTunes, which I like iTunes, but I don't always want to boot up iTunes just to pull down a video. An example, I had to give my friend a video that I had taken on my iPhone. You would think there'd be an easy way to do this. There's not. So I plugged in my iPhone, booted up Diskade 5, and I was easily able to pull down the video, and then I put it in my Dropbox, and he had access to it. Super, super simple to use. Really, really useful app. Give it a try. Go to digidna.net. Click on the big Diskade 5 icon. And if you could try it out, a lot of the features are free. And if you want to buy it, they're actually offering CultCast listeners 30% off. 30% off. So just enter the CultCast at checkout. And we're also going to be giving away 2 free licenses. So if you're interested in grabbing one of those licenses, head to our Facebook page, facebook.com/theCultCast. Leave a funny comment. Let me know that you want to get a license for Diskade 5. And I pick 2 winners every week and give away 2 licenses. Our other sponsor is a new sponsor. And they have got a great name. They're called Pimp My Screen. Do you guys think Snoop Mountain Lion probably uses this app? I think so.
Faux Shizzle.
And what Pimp My Screen allows you to do is customize your iOS device any way you like it. They give you access to a ton of backgrounds, wallpapers, shelves, iOS app skins. So like they have like little things that wrap around your icons to make them look cool. And they have these 2 features on their phone that make it really easy to customize your iPhone or iPad or whatever. So you can basically turn on like a home screen maker and it simulates your home screen. So it adds icons and adds all the stuff that's normally there. So you can see what the backgrounds are going to look like. And you can also do the same thing with your lock screen. It simulates a lock screen. So you can go through backgrounds, go through different pictures and stuff and see which ones you like. And then when you're ready, you just hit save. And it puts the wallpaper or whatever into your camera roll. So you can just go into your camera roll, set it as your background. They're adding new images all the time. All the stuff that they use cannot be found on the web. It's stuff that they create. The team at Pimp My Screen is a team of designers. They make all the stuff themselves. And they're always adding free content. So for 99 cents, the app's half off right now in the App Store. You can buy Pimp My Screen, and it's always being updated with free stuff. It's kind of like a subscription for 99 cents. So check that out. Search for Pimp My Screen on the App Store. Thank you to both of our sponsors. We really appreciate your support. Hey, let's talk about backing up. Do you guys back up Buster?
Buster went to sleep.
I think Buster does not back up.
I mean, I back up in the club.
You back that thing up.
Yeah.
I do too. But what I need to know is if you back up your data. Buster, are you still there?
Yeah, sorry. You guys put me to sleep earlier.
Buster, you're listening to Taylor Swift with your headphones on.
You are. Because I was like, oh, this Matt Haunen stuff is going on forever.
Buster, are you backing up your data?
Nope, I don't back up. I don't believe in that. I'm a free bird, free spirit.
Oh, my gosh. You probably go commando, too, don't you?
Well, I got iCloud. Isn't that all I need?
Well, yes. You would.
Yeah.
Are you high?
Dude, all right, hear me out, okay?
All right, let's hear what you
have. I put everything in Dropbox, right?
Everything.
I have, like, a hard drive that I put some stuff on, like, important, like, writing that I do. And then...
You don't do any important writing.
That's I'm not saying for Cult of Mac.
Okay.
I'm just saying other
personal
writing.
Personal journaling.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Your songwriting.
I don't have my photos backed up, but they're all on Facebook anyway, or Flickr, or Instagram. Like, I can get anything I need off of the internet, any apps or anything like that. So
you don't really feel like you have any data that is on your computer that if your computer was lost or stolen, you couldn't get again somehow?
Like, there's like I could retorrent all of the music that's in my iTunes library. I have an extra hard drive with
Not that you would do that, of course, but
I mean, I have like 120 gigs or something of music. So it would be a pain in the butt, but, you know, I'm just saying. I could get it all back pretty easily.
So you kind of feel like you don't really have anything you couldn't replace, so there's no need for you to back up.
Well, hopefully if somebody ever hacks me, they don't go in and like delete everything off.
Well, see, that's the problem, and that's exactly what happened to Matt, is they went into his iCloud and wiped his computer entirely. And like in that case, like what would you do, right? I mean, if you needed to go to work the next day and you needed to write an article, how would you get back up and running?
Well, see, I work on the internet, so that's, you know, I can get there pretty easy. I have another computer I can use. I could, you know,
what if you
like back up and running? It's just like looking at the internet and saying, oh, okay, here's some new cool shit.
Well, I have a feeling that, Alex, you and I are in a different situation. Because I have a lot of stuff that I can't lose. I have years and years of data on my computer. I'm a photographer. I have probably 100 gigs of photos that, you know, if I lost, I would be, you know, really depressed for years because it's stuff that can't be replaced. Alex, my guess is you're kind of in the same boat, right?
Yeah, I agree with Buster in the sense that, like, lately, like, for instance, when I got this new MacBook Pro with Retina display, I remember my last Mac upgrade freaking out about, okay, do I have everything backed up? Am I going to be able to save everything, move it over? And this was so painless. It was the most painless upgrade I've ever done because everything is already online and we live online, and iCloud, you know, syncs all that stuff that I was worried about before, like bookmarks and calendar and contacts. And so, you know, there's not. A lot of need for it anymore, but I still have a Time Machine backup that I use every day. I have an external hard drive on my desk, and that's just because, you know, I never know if I'm not for some reason going to have access to the internet. I may need something, you know, I have some large files, you know, whether it's video or music or other things, if I'm working on a project or whatever, I just want to have the comfort of knowing I have that stuff safe and tucked away. I don't trust the cloud totally yet because I've had moments where it's gone out on me, or where, you know, what if, you know, something goes down or a website changes? You know, these are all companies. Like, they're not, like, you can trust the bits that are in your hard drive sitting on your desk, but these companies are, you know, you never know. So I think there's a little bit to both sides, but.
Wow. Well, I feel like we're all on different levels here because, Alex, you're right in the middle. Buster's definitely on the liberal end, and I'm like, conserve everything. Like, I am a backup hoe bag. I backup everything all the time, and I use different services. I use Time Machine as well, and Time Machine is kind of my, whoops, I accidentally deleted that document strategy, you know, because I know we have, you know, documents in the cloud now, but most of my documents aren't in the cloud. They're on my hard drive, and I don't want to lose any of them. Yeah, you know, I do use Dropbox for my really important stuff, but it's a transition. You know, I mean, there's a lot of stuff I still need to move over to Dropbox, or I need to move over to iCloud, and it's a process for me because I have so much stuff.
And why do you have so much stuff, Airfan?
Well, because I have a business, you know, and so I need to save a lot of stuff. And I like to have my chat logs from, you know, 10 years ago. Like, I like to have that stuff.
Why?
Yeah, I never delete emails ever. Like, if they go into my deleted folder, they stay in the deleted folder. I never empty it, just in case I need to reference something in like 2 years. I think I might have a problem.
Yeah, see, that's the thing is, I feel like all of that stuff, it's not important. Like, the only things in life that, like, if I lost them for good, it'd be like a headache, would be like my birth certificate or something like that. Or, wow. I don't know.
Well, I think there is something. All,
like, that's the only thing, because I need it for, like, legality and everything. Well, everything else, photos, it's just like, you know, I still have those memories in my head. It's all backed up mentally.
Yeah, but in court, the memories in your head don't really serve a purpose. Like,
well, Irfan, I'm not has going a point. To court anytime soon.
But so. You never know. Like, especially if you run a business and you're doing business stuff all the time on your computer, like Irfan's chat logs, those could he could need those for evidence if he ever is sued, or
Need to burn them for as evidence.
That's actually a great point. That'd be more likely.
But I mean, you never know. Like, I've just seen instances where somebody has kept, you know, something from 2 years ago that seemed kind of, you know, trivial to keep, but that ended up being invaluable because of something ridiculous that happened to them legally. Use it. It's your own discretion. It's, you know, if you don't think it's, you don't need to have the chat logs, you know, where Irfan and I were arguing about pizza 2 years ago. Like, that's not going to,
that was a valuable conversation. Yeah. But I mean, I also have photos, and unlike you guys, I'm not just taking photos on my iPhone. Like, I have a DSLR. Every file that I take, you know, is 30 megabytes.
Irfan, I mean, as a professional photographer, like, you have to, that's your responsibility to have it backed up.
Exactly.
You can't lose those. That's your business, you know?
Exactly. And for a lot of my clients, it's like, I have to have that stuff forever. You know, like, if they don't have it, I just the other day I had somebody tell me that they didn't download the photos that I took for them. They're like, do you still have those? And I'm like, geez, I took those like a year ago for you. And they didn't have them. So I was able to give those to them. But rather than just doing Time Machine, I use Super Duper to clone my hard drive about once every week, every 2 weeks. So if my computer gets stolen, all I need to do is get my hands on a new computer, and I can either install the new hard drive on my new computer, or I just copy it over, and boom, I'm immediately exactly right back to where I was with no downtime at all. And then I also back up to the cloud. I've been using CrashPlan, and
jeez,
I know, dude. And I'm backing all my photos up to the cloud just in case my house burns down and all my backups get destroyed. Listen,
if my house burns down, the last thing I'm worried about is my photos.
Well, me too, because mine are backed up to the cloud. So, I mean, I have multiple redundancies. Like, I don't want to lose anything. I don't want to lose videos that I took, you know, from my different trips to Europe and stuff. I travel a lot, and, you know, that stuff is very valuable to me personally. And then also, you know, for stuff that I have for clients, it's like, you just don't want to lose that stuff. If you don't have a lot of data, then maybe this isn't a big deal to you. But, you know, I bet you Matt Honan thought he didn't have a lot of data. And, you know, look what he lost. I mean, he lost a whole year of images of his infant daughter's life that he could never replace.
That really sucks. That's definitely the worst part of everything, you know, according to him even, but just that, yeah, that's terrible.
Yeah, it's terrible. And that's the kind of stuff you don't realize that is important to you until you've lost it. And then you're like, wow, I didn't even realize that I had that stuff. You know, like, what if my house burned down and all of the cult casts got burnt up in a fire? Oh,
bummer.
Gosh, like, I mean, it would be in the history books.
Yeah, it would pretty much be on Wikipedia as one of the worst disasters of all time.
Definitely. Or at least like Reddit. I mean,
it would at least be on page 10 of Reddit. Least. So maybe page 20. So that's what I do. I mean, you kind of pick and choose how you want things to be backed up. I mean, you might go Buster's way and just be like, you know, I don't really have anything that is important to me. Or you can go my way and be totally secure. I mean, CrashPlan is $5 a month, and it's unlimited everything. You upload everything, which takes forever and sucks because you're uploading for days and days and days and days and days. But then once it's there, you're set. You know, like I never have to worry about my computer getting stolen. I don't have to worry about my house burning down. I don't have to worry about terrorists shooting a bazooka at my equipment. You know,
in it's like Seattle.
In Seattle, driving a bug because I stole their plutonium. I mean, you don't have to worry about any of that stuff. It's like, you know, you're totally safe. And that way, if something does happen and your account does get hacked, you can be back up and running with minimal, you know, data loss. Yeah. And I, for me, that's the way to go. But I recognize now that I'm much more anal than I thought.
Or you could just be like me and be in the middle of the road and trust the cloud, but not trust it too much and just be happy.
Well, I think that's a good point, too. I mean, trust the cloud, but don't trust it all the way, because these are companies. And as well as Apple's doing, you know, Apple's not immune to ever going out of business. And what happens if they do? You know, like, how are you going to get access?
Well, I mean, I'm going to get all my junk off Apple stuff, yeah. You know, if I see them tanking. But, I mean, you remember when Instapaper went down? Like, a lightning bolt hit the facility where it was hosted. And so it was down for whatever it was, 24 hours. So not that big of a deal. And it's just, you know, what you saved to read. But what if that would have been, you know, whatever, I don't know, Gmail, I don't know, something that you rely on every day, you know.
Then you should go out and enjoy the real world, Alex, instead of worrying about your Gmail. Just be like, sorry, guys, Gmail went down. I'm not working today.
Oh, no, I would definitely be like that. But
I'm just saying.
Well, let's move on. We've got some topics I want to cover before we wrap up. These are from our Facebook page. These are questions that people asked. And I chose some from the slew of comments that we got that I thought would be fun to cover. And the first one is kind of along the backup strategy lines of conversation. And this gentleman, Jacob Marquez, asks about photo management strategies. He says that his iPhoto library is a mess with lots of photos under events, dates. Some have names, some don't. I'm actually not a huge iPhoto user. Do you guys use iPhoto?
Yeah,
I do. Yeah.
How do you keep your photos managed, you know, on your computers?
Folders.
I mean, I really don't. Like, I use PhotoStream, and I've never really – I don't take, like, albums of photos for certain events usually. Like, if I go somewhere, I'll take a few shots on my iPhone, but it's in PhotoStream, and I can get it in iPhoto on the Mac, but I don't, like – I don't worry about events. I'll go through like every whatever few months and clean out copies and clean out a bunch of stuff I don't need. But I don't really pay attention to PhotoStream. Has kind of made it a lot easier for me not to worry about that.
And Buster, you said you just kind of keep stuff in folders.
Oh, I keep it all in iPhoto.
And you let iPhoto manage all your libraries for you. You don't keep your own folders, because I know like iPhoto can either keep everything in a big file or let you manage it yourself.
Yeah, I make like albums and stuff like that, and just sort everything like roughly by date or event.
One of the coolest things about PhotoStream is that it creates albums for each month. So really, my only albums in iPhoto are like, you know, January, February, like for those photos I took that month, and that's much more effective for me because I just take random shots. So I can go, yeah, I took that back in probably March, and go in and look at it, and that's really all I use.
Interesting. I use iPhoto to manage the photos on my iPhone because it's the easiest way just to dump everything off my iPhone. But I'm not very disciplined about it. I mean, I mean, like Jacob, I don't go through and put everything into events. I mean, sometimes it's not an event. Like you take a couple pictures every day. It's like there's no event to put those in. And then they're sorted by date.
Yeah, just like, do it by month.
Like yeah, that's kind of what I do too. And I find that that's the best way for me. That's the way that iPhoto does it by default. And that way I don't have to waste my time managing it, because I don't want to spend my time managing my photos. Now, that's actually my JPEG strategy. For my RAW strategy, so if you're shooting stuff with a DSLR, I use Adobe Lightroom because I think it's way better than iPhoto in many regards. And I manage those photos myself. I put everything into folders, and those folders go into dated folders. So I have 2011, 2012. And that way I can move those folders around if I'm not actively using them to my backup drives. And then I just name the folder whatever the event name was or whatever makes sense to me at that time so I can find it later. And that's how I do that. But as for iPhoto, I agree. It's kind of a cluster, and it can be really, really messy. Andrew Hughes. Hey, Andrew. I know you, big guy. He wants to know our thoughts on Dig V1. Are you guys Dig users?
Dig version 1 or the new updated version?
Well, that's what they're calling it. They're calling it Dig V1, the new updated version.
Isn't it like version 2, though? Like, technically?
No, technically.
It's like version 6.
Okay.
Have you used it, Alex?
I visited the homepage, and I think I downloaded the iPhone app. I went to the homepage for about 5 minutes, and that was it. And then I checked it the next day, and the content hadn't changed in like eight to ten hours. So I never went back.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
And Buster, what was your impression of it?
It's pretty much the same thing as Ox. When I heard about it, I downloaded the app, and I scrolled around, and then I was like, eh. And then I came back like the next day. And same thing. I remember seeing like the same picture at the front, and I was just like, "All right,
peace out."
Yeah,
I used it, and I haven't actually gone back yet, so I'm wondering if I'm gonna have the same experience. I thought the redesign was really good. I've been using Reddit, and I love Reddit, but I like the fact that Dig uses header images in all of their top stories, so you can actually see a picture of what you're about to read about. I thought that was a good addition, but other than that, I don't think I'm going to be switching from Reddit back to Dig. You know, yeah. Now that Kevin Rose is gone, Dig might be dead to me.
Well, Kevin Rose has been gone for a while, but yeah.
For a long time.
He got out when he knew he should.
He jumped ship right at the right
time.
That's
always been his talent. But that's right. Dig is poor Dig. Good. Yeah, sorry.
David Greer asks, he wants to know about the future of Thunderbolt. Will they make a USB 3 to Thunderbolt adapter? That's a very technical question. I don't know the technicality of doing that. Do you guys know if it's possible to make an adapter like that?
USB 3 to Thunderbolt?
Yeah.
Why would the Macs have USB 3 and Thunderbolt together, yeah, like side by side?
Yeah, so you want to have an adapter so you can like just use whatever.
So you can plug the adapter into one side of the computer and then the other?
Exactly.
So, why do you need an adapter?
Dude, just go with it, man. So many questions.
I honestly don't understand.
Answer David's question.
David, I don't know what you mean. Because I'm looking at my MacBook and Thunderbolt is right next to USB 3.
What if you don't want to use your Thunderbolt like slot, dude?
I mean, gosh. I guess there's a theoretical possibility that you're using two Thunderbolt and like whatever two or three USB connections and you need an adapter. And for that, I'm sorry.
You know what? Maybe he means this. And this has been something that I've thought about with Thunderbolt is maybe he wants to buy a USB drive because they're cheaper and use it in the Thunderbolt port because it's faster. That would make sense to me, but I don't think they're going to make one. I mean, after listening to what you just said, Alex, I'm like, yeah, you're right. Why would they make one of those? Here's the thing, right? I mean, USB 3 is being adopted, I think, much more swiftly than Thunderbolt.
Yeah.
Do you guys think Thunderbolt's going to be the next FireWire 800?
I don't know. There's a licensing problem with Thunderbolt where it's just too expensive and all the drives are too expensive. And, yeah, I don't know. Apple's going to have to, or Intel or whoever is doing this is going to have to change some things around because, no, it's USB's the future right now.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, USB 3 is obviously very, very fast. And
It's not
Thunderbolt fast, you know, but I mean, USB 2 wasn't FireWire fast. Right. And I prefer FireWire over USB 2, but the equipment is more expensive. So you have to have a specific need for it.
Yeah.
Last question.
Well, I was just going to say, maybe to help David, I think Apple does sell a FireWire to Thunderbolt adapter now. So that's
I'll probably have to buy. Yeah, so that's your answer. That's your answer, David. There's a FireWire to Thunderbolt adapter. I hope that helps. Daniel Jones, final question. He says, OS 11, to be or not to be? And he says it's going to be an iOS, Mac OS amalgamation.
That's a good word.
That's a great word. And a good question because this is something that we keep seeing, right? I mean, we keep seeing pieces of iOS slipping into our desktop operating systems. Do you guys think eventually we're going to see a unified operating system? Buster?
I don't think you'd see it for a while just because your iPad and a desktop computer, they function differently, but you see Apple adopting different elements from both into the different operating systems. So, you know, maybe in, you know, 5 years, I don't know.
Alex, what do you think?
Yeah, I'd say 5 to 8 years before there is no separate platforms, because it's going to take a while for iOS to get to the level where it can be as consumer friendly and also do like what's, I guess, Jobs described as like the truck stuff that Macs do. And you know, you can already do a lot of content creation on the iPad, but it's, you know, you can't, I'm not going to podcast on the iPad, you know? Yeah, Macs are safe for a long time. They're just not going to be as, you know, what desktop computers at the forefront for, you know, in the 90s and even in the early 2000s, you know, that's not the future anymore. It's mobile. So, they'll shrink, but yeah, I mean, as far as OS 11 goes, I guess is the next version, is that no, that's
10.9.
Yeah, so I mean, if they keep going on track, I don't know if Apple ties itself down to its numbering system. I doubt it, but yeah. We're looking at OS 11 in a couple of years, I guess, if they keep doing that. But I don't know.
I'm gonna take a different route. I'm gonna say we're never gonna see it. Because the desktop is totally different than the tablet or touch interface. And this is the route that I think Windows 8 is taking, actually, right? They're trying to unify everything into one operating system, and everyone hates it.
Yeah, because it's very premature, and it's not executed well.
It's not executed well. And plus, there are two different devices that require two different, you know, user interfaces. I mean, I have a keyboard and a trackpad on my MacBook Pro, and I don't really think we're going to see Apple get rid of those. I mean, people love desktop computers.
Well, I mean,
I don't think people are going to trade in their desktop computers for a tablet.
Eventually, we're going to be like Minority Report, where the whole way we interface with gadgets is going to change drastically, and it's going to take some breakthroughs, obviously. But when that happens, you know, the paradigms of how we relate with this stuff, when it's like totally different. Yeah, I mean, you can't even. Do I think it's never going to happen? No, just because I don't think the keyboard and the mouse is going to stay around forever. You know, it's going to evolve into something else eventually. Science fiction is.
You already have that, like the Leap Motion controller, which is really awesome.
Yeah,
stuff like Leap, that, you know.
But I mean, Leap requires a Mac, you know. But yeah. it is looking forward to, you know.
Well, what is the for those who don't know, what is the Leap Motion controller?
It's just like it uses gesture control, or it uses like your hand, and it's a really cheap accessory. Like I think $80. Mm-hmm. And it's attached to your Mac, so you can control everything, just like Alex is saying, Minority Report style, just from your Mac. Alex Caney was one of the first people on the internet to get a real-life demo of it. It looks awesome.
And that's where you hold your hands in the air, though, right?
Yeah.
Didn't Steve Jobs say
that was a major problem because people's arms got tired?
Well, you're not touching the screen, though. You're not. You can hold it in different ways.
Yeah, no, you don't. Irfan, this is literally like Tom Cruise holding his hands out, you know, 4 feet from the screen and moving things in midair. That's what it is. So it's like you can hold a pen up in the air and draw, but you're not actually on the screen. And you can spin things around, you know, with your hands in 3D. And it's really cool.
I mean, that sounds cool, but that's not something that I ever see the elderly using, right? When they don't have like upper body strength.
I mean, to be frank, the elderly are gonna die, right? So
but that's gonna be us, dude.
I mean, I'm at the age where I'll use this stuff, you know. Like I think there's maybe one more generation that is not gonna be able to adapt to it, but you know, we're all being, you know, kids are being born into this touch world where touch is what they expect.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, just think about it this way. In 10 years, Leander Caney is gonna be 74. He's not going to be using that device.
That's very true.
Granted, he's in great shape from the ribboning that he does. But
is he
still.
Really 64?
No. not even close, but I hope he hears this.
I mean, I just wanted to make sure.
He's more like, you know, I think he's in his upper 60s.
Doing some Pilates.
Yeah, it looks great for his age. Well, hey guys, that's it. We're out of time for today. I want to thank our sponsors, Pimp My Screen, on the iTunes store. Check them out. I want to thank DigitDNA.net for sponsoring this show. Remember, you can get 30% off your Diskette 5 order with the discount code THECULTCAST. Check them out at DigitDNA.net. This has been the CULTCAST, the best 30-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. And hey, the conversation continues on Twitter. You can follow Buster at BST3R. Alex is Alex E. Heath. I'm at Erfon, E-R-F-O-N. And of course, Cult of Mac is just Cult of Mac for all the best news, reviews, and how-tos. New episodes of the CULTCAST come out every Thursday night. Thanks for listening, everyone. We will catch you guys next time.
Yep. Hey, how did that Michelle Australian runner, what's her name, do?
I don't know.
She's a hurdler. Do you know who I'm talking about, Buster?
Oh, I don't.
Yeah, you do. You showed me the BuzzFeed gif of her jumping up and down, you pervert.
Oh, her. Oh, okay. I don't know.